Gonna go to the place that's the best. Gonna go up to the spirit in the sky. Going up to the spirit in the sky. That's where I'm gonna go, to the spirit in the sky. The spirit in the sky.
Well, 2 years ago, a satellite was launched, a very special satellite. It was called Spirit, hence our playing that Spirit in the Sky theme. And it was from Melbourne University, yes, right here in the city of Melbourne. And it was made there, and it carried an Italian instrument as well. On the January 10 program of 2024, we spoke with Clint Therakam. He is the thermal engineer at the Melbourne Space Laboratory. And he told us all about the satellite and the thermal engineering that went into the satellite. He was bursting at the time to tell us some of the results. But as the way it is in science, you just have to be a bit patient. You can't just publish willy-nilly. You've got to have peer-reviewed thing. Well, last week I was at the Space Science Conference here in Melbourne, and I caught up with Michelle Trenti, the principal investigator of Spirit, and he told me some of the exciting results that have now been found out.
Hi, I'm Michele Trenti. I'm a professor at the University of Melbourne and the principal investigator of the Spirit satellite mission.
You've got your second anniversary of the launch of Spirit, and we can't show it on the radio, of course, but you're getting lots of pictures of the Earth and the satellite. But there's an instrument that I'm particularly curious about. Could you tell us about it, please?
Yeah, of course. Spirit has multiple payloads on board, and our primary instrument is a Gamma X-ray space telescope that has been provided to the mission through scientific cooperation with our colleagues in Italy, and in particular with the Italian Space Agency and with the Italian National Institute of Astrophysics. And the goal of the Hermes space telescope on Spirit is to identify gamma ray bursts, which are flashes of gamma X-ray radiation that are emitted when a massive star dies, collapsing and rotating down into a black hole, or when you have two compact stars, such as neutron stars, smashing into each other and again collapsing down into a black hole.
And these events are quite common, aren't they?
I would say that they're quite common as far as the universe goes. The universe is a big place, and if you have a dedicated instrument scouting the sky for gamma ray bursts, such as the NASA Fermi satellite or the NASA Niels Gerald's SWIFT satellite, you might get a gamma ray burst every few days from these large space telescopes.
We launched 2 years ago, and has the instrument worked?
So the instrument actually worked pretty well. We're very pleased. We were able to achieve the so-called first light of the instrument, so we turn it on in January 2024, so about 6 weeks after launch. We knew the instrument was working. Then we started a long process of commissioning the instrument at the same time while we were commissioning the spacecraft. And essentially, commissioning means learning to fly or drive your satellite and your instrument, because no matter how much testing you can do, in the lab, when you launch something in space, when you communicate with it only every couple times a day, you have a few days of lead time to uplink the telecommands, you execute the operations, you get the results back a couple of days later, you have a very slow progress understanding how you can effectively operate what you have in orbit. So throughout essentially the last 2 years, we've progressively increased our capability to carry out scientific observations with the instrument. We've been observing some recurring sources in the sky, such as the Crab Nebula, which emits pulses of gamma and X-ray radiation every 40 milliseconds. It's like a lighthouse, a cosmic lighthouse, shining its beam to us and rotating very rapidly. So every 40 milliseconds we get this shine. It's very, for a telescope such as Spirit, which is a shoebox-sized satellite, it means that we had to stack multiple data sets to find the signal, but we're finding the signal, so we're very happy with the instrument performance. And very recently, we started our campaign, finally, to try to listen for gamma ray bursts. And so we're hoping to get a good present, hopefully by Christmas we'll start getting our first GRB. That would be my Christmas wish list for Santa.
What sort of area of the sky do you scan? Is it staring at one spot, or do you, as you go around the Earth, do you scan the sky?
So the field of view of the instrument is fairly large. We're sensitive to almost half of the sky. So essentially all the sky that the instrument sees, with a bit of various degrees of sensitivity. Of course, if an event happens and is straight in the field of view of the instrument, that's a bit easier to detect than if we are at the very edges. But so our approach is that because we have such a large field of view, we generally try to point Spirit out at zenith and just make sure we don't have the Earth in the way to obscure our field of view.
When you've detected a gamma ray burst, do you pass it on to other agencies so that they can follow up?
Yeah, that's a really good question. There is a very well established network of rapid alerts for such astrophysical transients. So as soon as you identify that there is one such astronomical transient, you publish a circular that is then distributed automatically to various observatories around the world. It's available on the web, and so every other research group can also look and try to follow up or confirm that event with their own facility.
Do you have some results in the queue, as it were, to be published?
Yeah, as I said, we're in the process of publishing the first scientific results that we have obtained with the Crab Nebula observations, and we're very, very keen to go out with a paper as soon as we get the first GRB. At the moment, it's essentially playing the waiting games. I was saying these GRB events are once every few days for a much larger space telescope. For Spirit, we're a bit less sensitive because we're so small, so we can only catch sort of the tip of the iceberg of the GRB population, so we just need to be a bit more patient. But already I feel that Spirit has exceeded its science objectives. We've been operating the instrument very effectively in orbit for almost 2 years now. We've validated all our analysis techniques, the instrument performance, and I think we're really ready to take the next steps and now fly larger versions of the same technology.
I believe that other organizations are building similar telescopes.
Yeah, I think there has been a real shift in the last probably 5 years to go from monolithic space telescopes that take a decade or two to be developed and are only possible with major space agencies to trying to do astrophysics with small satellites. So there have been probably another half a dozen of small satellites that with various degrees of success have been launched to carry out gamma X-ray studies of the cosmos from space. And gamma X-ray astrophysics is really one area where you need to be in space. Fortunately for us, the gamma X-rays don't reach the surface, so there is no way of having this type of observatories down on the ground.
Anything else you want to tell us about your experiment?
Now maybe I'll just finish off to say that, as you were mentioning, we put some small cameras on Spirit. They were meant to have primarily a public engagement element, just to take images and inspire the public. But they've also been very helpful to help us diagnose what was happening on the instrument and on the spacecraft. If you want to point somewhere, taking a picture and making sure that where the satellite tells you you're pointing at is where you're pointing is really, really invaluable.
Well, thanks for joining us on the Space Show.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And I was speaking there last week with Michel Trenti, the principal investigator on the Spirit satellite from the University of Melbourne. And if you want to hear the talk with Clint Theracam, the thermal engineer, you can go to the Space Show's website, which is space.southernfm.com.au, and go to the list of names and go down to Theracam. Anyway, that's the Spirit in the Sky.
Going up to the Spirit in the Sky. Gonna go to the place that's the best. Gonna go up to the Spirit in the Sky. Going up to the Spirit in the Sky. That's where I'm gonna go, to the Spirit in the Sky. The Spirit in the Sky.
Well, sorry about the abrupt start to that little sting there. A bit of fun here on Southern FM. Now, we're going to Ireland. Why? Well, on the same rocket that launched Spirit, Ireland had its first satellite. And mounted on the satellite was a poem. And we're going to listen to that poem now, and we'll hear another version of it later on. This poem was written by 12 school students, led by Paul Perry, Associate Professor of Creative Writing at the University College Dublin, and Shiamaka Enye Amandi, a graduate at the University College Dublin. And she was the 2019 recipient of the Poetry Ireland Access Circuit Bursary. And is also led by Jessica Trainer, a poet in residence at the Yeats Society. So here we go. We're going to listen to this poem that was on AirSat satellite.
Always home, a lone pilot searching for home amid starry frescoes and little blood waves that mimic the tide pull.
Our insignificance. Our planet a crumb on the fabric of spacetime.
Sharing the same sky, you and I, wherever feet are anchored.
I will write your name on the moon with my fingertips, an apparition cast for memory's design.
Universe whisper, orange as goldfish. All I want is the delicious scent, the dark, blue, muddy shoes.
And ruined grass of starlight, home. Strawberry moon in the cloudless blue, black mystic. One day it could all be rain.
Those windswept words, voices clutched to our warmth. Courage plucked from conversation. Breeze breath, feel the blush dust my cheeks. the stars like old photos.
Leave the porch light on. The children dance. Their mothers sing. Everything changes all at once. The sky, the sun.
Bound with images of mystery like lemongrass and sleep, except for the tree.
I look up. I see stars. They live forever inside me.
Home is the wild bitterness of backyard blackberries.
A bay tree, its fragrant leaves, breathing easy. A smell so familiar, it has none.
That poem was etched onto the side of the AirSat 1 satellite. Now, that satellite was launched along with the Melbourne University Spirit satellite on 2023, December the 2nd, at 5:19 a.m. Australian Eastern Daylight Time, which happened to be a Saturday. Now, whereas Spirit is still working and in orbit, AirSat, unfortunately, is neither working nor in orbit. The end of its mission came in September this year. It was deployed into orbit 1 hour and 22 minutes after launch. And there were 25 spacecraft deployed from that same SpaceX mission. We're going to hear a feature now about AirSat 1, which happened to be Ireland's very first satellite. Unlike Spirit, which was not Australia's first satellite, this one was. Now let's go to just before the launch.
Good evening and welcome to University College Dublin and to Mission Control. Behind me, I'm Rick O'Shea and I'm here with you this evening for the night on which Ireland becomes a spacefaring nation. Welcome along to the launch of AirSat 1. Ireland's first ever satellite put together by a team of students over the last 6 years here at UCD with the help of the European Space Agency. Maeve Doyle, Maeve, tell me about your role within all of this.
So I'm a former AirSat 1 team member. I worked on the project during my MSc first and then my PhD on the flight software and operations for the mission.
Maeve, somebody has switched on just now, has absolutely no idea what is happening other than that Ireland is launching its first satellite tonight. Just take us back 6 years and maybe explain to us the story of AirSat 1.
Yeah, so I suppose AirSat 1 really got started because of the interest of a research group here in the School of Physics at University College Dublin called the Space Science Research Group. That research group are very interested in an astrophysical source known as gamma ray bursts or GRBs and the high energy radiation that they give off. So as part of that interest, they were looking into the development of detector technologies, miniaturised detector technologies as part of ESA contracts prior to the FYS programme. But then when the Flyer Satellite 2 call came about to have university class projects potentially launch these miniaturised satellite platforms with a payload on board, it very much piqued the interest of the group. It's a small spacecraft, but a lot of capabilities packed in, the first of which is a gamma ray detector. So we have the solar panels removed from two sides of this model here so that we can see inside. And we can see GMOD, which is our gamma ray detector, which is going to be used to study the high energy light from gamma ray bursts. The second payload is on the exterior of the spacecraft. It's called the Embio module, or EMOD. So that's a thermal materials experiment. And the third payload, I can unfortunately not point out because it's a software-based payload. And that's going to control the orientation of AirSat 1 on orbit.
Why do we test spacecraft? Because space is hard. Space is very hard. And it starts on the ground. And, you know, it's really a hostile environment. And the big problem we have with space is that if something goes wrong, you cannot just, you know, get on your car and drive there and fix it.
We knew this would be a way to inspire young people in the country, not just about space, but about STEM and about, you know, being bold and going after your dreams. Ireland has a great tradition of writers and writing, so we thought one brilliant way could be to connect AirSat 1 to Irish writing, and that was the beginning of the poem. The poem is called Always Home, and it came about through a collaboration with creative writers in English in UCD and the Museum of Literature Ireland. They had the network of librarians throughout the country who brought the school pupils together with the writers to create the poem over a series of workshops that were held online during lockdown. So the poem is etched using a laser onto the outer cover of the
antenna deployment module on the spacecraft. The antenna we use to communicate with the spacecraft, and that the spacecraft uses to communicate to us back on Earth.
Joyce believed he could do anything with words.
Always Home, a lone pilot searching for home amid starry frescoes and little blood waves that mimic the tide pull.
Our insignificance. Our planet a crumb on the fabric of space-time.
Sharing the same sky, you and I, wherever feet are anchored.
I will write your name on the moon with my fingertips, an apparition cast from memory's design.
Universe whisper, orange as goldfish. All I want is the delicious scent, the dark, blue, muddy shoes.
And ruined grass of starlight, home. Strawberry moon in the cloudless blue, black mystic. One day it could all be rain.
Those windswept words, voices clutched to our warmth. Courage plucked from conversation. Breeze breath, feel the blush dust my cheeks, the stars like old photos.
Leave the porch light on. The children dance, their mothers sing. Everything changes all at once. The sky, the sun.
Bound with images of mystery like lemongrass and sleep, except for the tree.
I look up, I see stars. They live forever inside me.
Home is the wild bitterness of backyard blackberries.
A bay tree, its fragrant leaves, breathing easy. A smell so familiar, it has none.
The space show will return to Ireland in a few moments.
Across Bayside Melbourne since 1990, you're listening to 88.3 Southern FM.
And across Melbourne, since 1991, this is the space show. And we're going back to Ireland, where we're learning about AIRSAT 1, which is launched for Ireland, Ireland's first satellite, along on the same rocket that launched Melbourne's university's very own Spirit satellite.
My work mostly focuses on GMOD, the gamma ray module, which is our primary science payload. So we have a little crystal, it's about this size, and the gamma ray photons come in and they interact with the crystal and they produce light that we can see. And we have little sensors in there that detect this light and then turn it into an electric signal so we can then process that and make our light curves and understand kind of the event that happened. And then we know that in this time frame there was a really violent explosion in space, and we know that it lasted about this long, and we can understand how much energy, how energetic it was, all just from the data that we get from GMOD.
The detectors on the payloads, on the experiments, those were the things that we built completely from scratch ourselves. And then we bought off-the-shelf components for power and for the computer and for the comms system. And then it was like a bit of an effort to sort of put those together in a way that would work and make sure that they would all work together. And we were like really deep in the design aspect of the satellite. It would just sort of seep into my dreams. Like I'd wake up in the middle of the night, I was like, oh God, I can't put the GPS module there. Like this isn't going to work.
We're going to hear more about the gamma ray detection.
Well, gamma rays are the most extreme radiation in the universe. A lot of them come from, for example, exotic objects like gamma ray bursts. And gamma ray bursts are very short, intense radiation of gamma rays. And they last for a couple of seconds to minutes. The energy output of a gamma ray burst is the same as the sun does over its overall lifetime. So you can imagine that they're very, very, very intense phenomena in the universe. There are two types of gamma ray bursts, basically. Ones which last, which are short ones, and there are also gamma ray bursts which last longer. But the short gamma ray bursts, they happen in colliding neutron stars, and these are the heaviest stars in the universe. And the long gamma ray bursts, they happen in supernova, for example, a collapse of a heavy star. Both gamma ray bursts can have the same brightness, but it's the energy output which tells us that they are very intense and they come from far away. Because if they would be closer, they would have radiated away the atmosphere of the Earth. For example, if it interacts with matter, then it can destroy matter. So there is a lot of energy in a gamma ray. I mean, if they would happen in our galaxy, then it would be a threat to life on Earth. And since we are still here, it hasn't happened yet.
And we're back to Ireland again with another feature about this EIRSAT. EIRSAT means Irish satellite, of course.
When a massive star dies, so it collapses and it kind of ejects all of this media or all of this material in two directions, what we call gamma ray bursts, which are these really violent explosions in space, as some of the most bright, most luminous, the amount of energy that they give off. So it's a hard to imagine amount of energy. And if we understand how gamma ray bursts happen, and kind of even the processes to getting all this energy, we are also understanding kind of processes in the early universe, how our universe came about, how certain elements are formed, elements that we're made of.
I think we've got a couple more features about this satellite. And this is going to be about the burst detector.
We have witnessed the launch. It has happened successfully. Now we're talking about the science that AIRSAT-1 is going to be involved with. Joining me is Sheila McBreen from UCD. Before we talk about anything else, Sheila, explain to me your role here.
So I'm a professor in the School of Physics in University College Dublin, a member of the AIRSAT team, and also a member of CSPACE, which is our centre for space research here in UCD.
You seem remarkably calm for someone who has just witnessed what you've witnessed.
Yeah, it's very surreal, as Maeve said, so I'm feeling a sense of calm and just overall pride and excitement in what's going to happen next.
Tell me about the next then. Talk a little bit to me about why gamma ray bursts are so interesting.
Well, so I studied gamma ray bursts for nearly 20 years, so I find them really interesting. So they are explosions, as Eric has mentioned. So they are the death of a massive star or the merger of two very dense objects, and they usually produce a black hole at the end. They happen regularly in galaxies, not close to us, not in our region of the galaxy. And they signify a huge amount of energy or gamma rays which are produced. They're beacons, really, and one thing that's really useful about them is they light up a galaxy, like a bolt of lightning in a galaxy, really briefly, but very brightly. So we can use gamma ray bursts not only to learn about explosions, but to learn about galaxies that are very far and distant from us because the gamma rays will reach us. And we can learn about things like the production of heavy elements within those galaxies, which are very far away from us.
And we need the likes of AIRSAT-1 to do this because obviously we can't look for gamma rays inside the Earth's atmosphere.
No, that's correct. The atmosphere protects us from gamma rays in general, and in particular from gamma ray bursts. So in order to be able to detect gamma ray bursts, we have to go into orbit. And that's why we've built AIRSAT-1, which contains the gamma ray module, GMOD, and that does the detection of gamma rays.
Maybe show me that on little baby AIRSAT-1.
Maeve's explained AIRSAT-1 already. So this is the EMOD. GMOD is here, towards the top. That there, the block, is a scintillator, and the gamma rays come into that scintillator and produce optical radiation. The optical radiation or light is detected by optical sensors. That's then sent to the board, which does the processing, extracts all the events and sends them to the brains of the satellite, which is code that Maeve has written on the onboard computer. Mm-hmm. And that looks for increases. And if there's an increase in the amount of light that's produced in that crystal, we know there's been a gamma ray burst.
And in terms of when AIRSAT-1 is orbiting the Earth, when it's fully operational, when it is looking for these gamma ray bursts, is there a specific part of the sky it needs to point at? Is there a place where it's more likely to find them than others?
That's a really good question, because actually we cannot know in advance where a gamma ray burst will go off in the sky or when. So the job of GMOD is to orbit the Earth and be ready for a gamma ray burst to come from any direction at any time. And that's what it does.
And we've got one more thing about the satellite, and that's about the end of the mission.
Ireland's first satellite, AIRSAT-1, has completed its mission orbiting the Earth and will deorbit in the coming days. The launch of the CubeSat, built by students and faculty at University College Dublin under guidance of the European Space Agency, in 2023 marked a major milestone in Ireland's space journey. Its success demonstrated the country's ability to design, build, and operate a satellite, strengthening national expertise and laying the foundation for future growth in the Irish space sector. The mission trained more than 50 students, primarily postgraduate researchers in physics, engineering, computer science, and mathematics. This included 13 PhD students. Professor Lorraine Hanlon, director of the IRSAT-1 project in UCDC Space, the Center for Space Research, said,
"Although it's a sad day for the team, we're proud that IRSAT-1 has reached the end of its mission having achieved all of its goals. We're keen to apply what we have learned, building new missions and collaborating to grow Ireland's space sector. I want to acknowledge the achievements of everyone who played a role on the team and worked incredibly hard to make it such a success."
University College Dublin's Vice President for Research, Innovation and Impact, Professor Kate Robson-Brown, commented,
"Ireland became a spacefaring nation with the launch of our first ever satellite, IRSAT-1, and I congratulate all the staff and students at University College Dublin whose dedication and expertise over many years has driven the success of this mission. UCD has deep expertise in space science and engineering and is in prime position to take Ireland forward into a new and ambitious era of growth for the space sector, which will deliver both scientific discovery and societal impact. Our researchers are working at the frontiers of next-generation in-orbit technologies, and they, and our graduates, are already bringing that expertise to industry."
The result of more than a decade of research at UCD, IRSAT-1 introduced space systems engineering and skills not previously seen across any Irish industry or academia, and helped lead to the country's largest space investment of €7.9 million as part of the UCD-led National Space Subsystems and Payloads Initiative, which is developing next-generation satellite control systems. Minister of State for Employment, Small Business and Retail Alan Dillon, TD, said the project demonstrated
the potential and ambition which can be achieved when industry and academia collaborate. "I am very proud that the mission was supported by my department, through our membership of the European Space Agency. IRSAT-1 demonstrates the value of membership of the European Space Agency for a small country, such as Ireland, giving our researchers and companies access to a unique platform to develop novel technologies and strengthen our national capabilities in space research and technology."
As part of its mission, it carried three payloads designed for low Earth orbit experiments. These included the Gamma Ray Module, which detected 10 cosmological gamma ray bursts and two solar flares, the Wave-Based Control Module, which tested a new satellite pointing system, and the ENBIO module, which trialed advanced thermal management coatings in space. The Research Island funded gifts project builds on the success of GMOD experiment. It is a 6-unit CubeSat mission to detect and localize gamma ray bursts, which will improve sky coverage of existing gamma ray burst observatories and contribute to the search of electromagnetic counterparts to gravitational wave events. In addition, UCD Seaspace has been selected by ESA for a follow-on project called ComCubes that will develop a CubeSat swarm to deliver faster and more detailed information about gamma ray bursts.
A lone pilot searching for home amidst starry frescoes and little blood waves that mimic the tide pull. Our insignificance, our planet a crumb on the fabric of space-time.
Sharing the same sky, you and I, wherever feet are anchored. I will write your name on the moon with my fingertips, an apparition cast from memory's design. Universe, whisper, orange as goldfish. All I want is the delicious scent, the dark blue muddy shoes and ruined grass of starlight. Home. Strawberry moon in the cloudless blue-black mystique. One day, it could all be rain. Those wind-swept words, voices clutched to our warmth, courage plucked from conversation.
Breeze breath, feel the blush dust my cheeks, the stars like old photos. Leave the porch light on. The children dance, their mothers sing. Everything changes all at once. The sky, the sun. Bound with images of mystery, like lemongrass and sleep, except for the tree.
I look up. I see stars. They live forever inside me. Home is the wild bitterness of backyard blackberries. A bay tree, its fragrant leaves, breathing easy. A smell so familiar, it has none.
LinkedIn, David McEwen wrote on August the 14th, under the headline, Successful Test of AirSat-1 Control System Payload, he wrote the following.
I've got a nice update on AirSat-1. We have successfully tested an advanced onboard control system that allows it to orient itself accurately in space. We called this payload Cold Wave-Based Control, a software platform designed by the talented team at University College Dublin Mechanical and Materials Engineering to test new satellite maneuvering techniques while in orbit. I've been lucky enough to act as engineering manager for AirSat-1, and this achievement marks a major milestone for my group. Being able to demonstrate that we can test and deploy novel control strategies and then operate reliably in orbit and paves the way for developing satellite orientation control for missions with tight constraints, such as optical communications. Like all good academics, I rely on highly skilled research team to do all their hard work while I write the LinkedIn posts. The work was led by Chief Engineer of AirSat-1, Dr. Joseph Thompson, and two of my PhD students, Bas Stijnan and Fionn Gibson-Keeley. The results are validation of years of their hard work and rigorous testing by the team. How does it work? The CubeSat uses electromagnets to adjust its orientation by interacting with Earth's magnetic field, which, while reliable and energy efficient, are insufficient by themselves to enable precise pointing of the satellite. The software causes the satellite to spin around one of its main axes, providing stabilization in a manner similar to a spinning top. Once stabilized, the satellite can gradually reorient itself towards a desired target direction. All this was part of a great collaboration with Zach Manchester's group at Carnegie Mellon University. Data collected during testing over three orbits showed that the satellite successfully spun up and achieved pointing accuracy within just a few degrees. Some short periods without control occurred when the satellite was in Earth's shadow or when sensor readings were limited by the alignment of the Sun and Earth's magnetic field. During these times, the satellite paused its maneuvers as expected. What's next? AirSat-1 is coming to end of its mission, but we have already started National Space Subsystems and Payloads Initiative, with over €7.9 million in funding from Ireland's Disruptive Technologies Innovation Fund. I've the pleasure of being principal investigator for this, and we get to lead the design of next-generation satellite control systems using model-based design and hardware-in-the-loop testing. Plus a whole load of other stuff with six great Irish space companies and my colleagues at University College Dublin Sea Space.
We have heard that poem in English several times. Now let's hear it in Irish.
Pielo to Enoid, so toad it a mile in mask rascone and the rail. Agus tunta bug a fulla, it's in the Irish air harinch na tija, not bug or dawacht. Grauroog é ar blanéid ar éadach an spás ama. Rínamuids an spéid chéna, misi agus tussa, cuma chén áta bhil na cosa fúin. Scríbí mé tainim ar an ngealach le bór ma véide. Taise a teligiú ó fátrú na cuimri. Cugar na crinne agus tá a ráist an éis orgéir. Níl wem ach an cúrán ríomh lasta. Na brog a dúchor a milán lábáin agus fér mírte hulas na réalt, an báile. An gealach in a sútá lún sa dívrach lúchorum gáin néal, láigin, seans, ní bhé ánach farthin, na focail scéirdiúla sin, Glóra a dhéanamid leog an tas. Mishnach a áisctar as an górá. Aná lóhna, arím an lishna me lechna, na réaltaí in a sean fictúr. Cuina solas an fórs ar lasa, tá na páistí ag rinke agus a máhracha ag cána. Achrítar an ilaní in éinacht, an spéir, an hirian. Cangalte le híváan a rún díavra, féirli a móidach agus sún, cés muitach an chrán. Féachim in áirte, feicim na réaltaí, maidin siad anam gadeo. Is é as baile dúin, séribh í áin smédat av an chlóis. Crán lauris gan a chuileoga cúra. Analú ré. Bála, a bhfuil aithna chomá sin éir, na hándal.